Welcome to another episode of Ascension Workers. I thought for this episode I would do something a little different and just share a little bit of my thoughts of what's going on in the world and what's going on in my processing of what the world seems to be processing right now. This seems to be a very strange time with the election that just occurred, where people seem to be much more divided in ways that seem almost more emotional than logical. And it seems that there's almost like a sense of people falling off a cliff within people's own hearts. You know, they're people who they used to love. They feel like they can't love them if they feel like they voted for the other person. And I don't think that's an exaggeration to say that, because of the intensity of what I've seen shared just from friends that I know. It's almost as though I can't even openly talk to those friends anymore if they are too strongly emotional about these things. And I've been processing this in the context of empathy a little bit. And how much can I really empathize with people who are believing lies? And I wonder if I should probably just do this processing out loud with you guys, and you can share comments and we can have this discussion. I know this would be a great one to have with other people. And I thought I would start out with just sharing some thoughts. But I think I've been processing this on three different categories, really. It seems like, well, first of all, the Law of One books say that we're entering a time where there'll be increased polarization of individuals and polarization of social complexes. And of course, the word polarization often means, in the context of individuals, it means that people are polarizing more towards a desire to be of service to self or desire to be of service to others. And the desire to be of service to self can manifest in forms of control and manipulation, and the desire to be of service to others will manifest in forms of acceptance of others and essentially release of those feelings of separation. So in a sense, the polarity does not matter as much to one polarity, because the need to manipulate is not there. And the desire to love, regardless of what other people are thinking or believing, is very strong. So ultimately, when I'm saying polarization of social complexes, I'm saying that this is really an ambiguous concept of all the ways in which we can be divided, which don't necessarily relate to how separate we are on a core level, but they seem to relate how separate we are when we talk about certain things or attach ourselves to certain things. And there's three different categories of attachments that I want to address today. The first one being religious attachments, and Christianity specifically seems to be the strongest way in which people are polarizing in this country. And the second area is obviously political. And I'm going to discuss the ways in which it seems that there's a seemingly insurmountable political divide between people. And I'll discuss this in terms of, you know, recognizing the projection of self that we're seeing in others and finding the gratitude and the love that allows us to blend our energies and be of service to others, regardless of what lies people are believing or what facts people believe are facts. And the third area would be the conspiracy community in general, the truth-seeking community, where you have people very divided over who's trustworthy, what can be believed, and very little evidence in that area as well, when people are just using their words to make claims, and the words are what have us divided, where we find ourselves capable of feeling that there is a so-called enemy in someone if their words are not something that we trust. And so I thought maybe a good point to start this conversation would be what a book I love called Miracle of Love by Ram Dass. This was the original edition. There's a newer edition that may have some things that were controversial not included, so just a note on that. But on page 353 of this book, Ram Dass is talking about the stories around Maharaji and Christ. And Maharaji was Ram Dass's guru, who seemed to have paranormal abilities he could do, or at least he was aligned with the creator such that he could facilitate the experience of miraculous happenings, miracles of healing. And these things did not come through Maharaji, they came from the creator. But this person seemed to be able to have a deep insight into anything. In the future, in the past, he could just see and know all sorts of things. And this page 353 said, Maharaji's love of Christ was unearthly. When he was asked, who was Christ? Maharaji answered, and then there's some examples of quotes here that Maharaji said about Christ. He was one with all beings, and he had great love for all in the world. He was one with God. Another quote was, you must accept the teachings of Christ and follow them. Christ said to be like a little child, never think or speak anything that could harm anyone. Be like a little child, never think or speak anything that could harm anyone. Another quote here is, no one believes in Christ, but I do, which is interesting in the context of Christians often talking about belief in Christ as being this foundational thing. What does it really mean? And of course, this is, he's usually speaking in Hindi, and it's translated, maybe even translated, retranslated by Ram Dass into a different word than, this is a summary from Ram Dass, really. But another quote here, it's maybe translated, is, he was crucified so that his spirit could spread throughout the world. He sacrificed his body for the Dharma. He never died. He is Atman, which means the soul, living in the hearts of all. So these are some quotes from Maharaji that suggested that there was an appreciation for something of an identity in Christ that was living in the hearts of all. And this seems to be, you know, connected to the Christian concept of inviting Christ into your heart. But this is another way of looking at it, that Christ is living in the hearts of all. And you, if you can associate an identity with love itself, then you can recognize that there is an opportunity for us to loosen our attachments to separated identity by at least allowing the possibility that we are in all and all is in us. And the teachings of Christ could certainly transcend anyone who tries to talk about it, certainly transcended the writings in the Bible because of how hard it is to get to this core truth of love in our hearts being the core identity which unifies us all, that we're all coming from. This also is a great reminder of the nature of the logos described in the Law of One. They actually said the word logos can mean love. It can be a synonym for love. And if you take the idea of John chapter 1, that Christ is love incarnate, that logos became flesh, then you appreciate the idea that there is, in all of us, there is love seeking to become known, seeking to become expressed through these bodies, through these actions and behaviors. And to some degree, it's blocked, it's shielded. If we take up beliefs of separated identity, if we remove the belief in that which is Christ and take up the belief in that which is separation, we can slow down the flow of appreciation of love, of recognition of love. But ultimately, I think this core teaching relates to the idea that we're one in love, and we're one in the ability to find that love within our hearts and see ourselves and others and see that all is just a projection of a distortion or a belief that there is something other than that love, which could be residing in a darkness, a kind of spiritual darkness. And you know, in the physical world, we're seeing people, you know, seemingly enslaving one another, seemingly fighting with one another. And this is just another way of sort of hiding and masking the true love that was, which was the root of these bodies, these distortions of incarnation, which are essentially, you could say that these are all distortions of the Christ consciousness. They're all distortions or filters that are blocking the clearest perceptions of that love. Another story here that was told about Christ. Maharaji was asked, why was Christ so maligned? Maharaji was asked. And it says, it is so, Maharaji responded, it is so with all saints, but they see only love in everyone. You should not speak, hear, or see evil. You should see love everywhere and in everyone. See the good in all. And that may be a different concept of, you should not speak, hear, or see evil than most people are recognizing. When we see evil, in others, it's essentially like we're missing the truth. We've blinded ourselves from the deeper love that is the source of that expression. And of course, you could go into the Law of One philosophy and talk about how all of these catalysts of seeing something other than love are essentially teaching mechanisms to help us balance that which in ourselves was still capable of a lack of forgiveness, a lack of appreciation of the infinite creator, a lack of seeing God or choosing to see God, or the sacramental nature of this experience allowing us to see God. But ultimately, when we speak here and see evil, it's an indication that we can choose to see in another way. And so this is why I wanted to title this conversation the empathy for the quote enemy. And the idea of the enemy is also kind of paradoxical when you think about Christ in the Bible saying to pray for your enemies, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. And it's almost like you can't possibly have an enemy if you are trying to empathize completely, such that you look for, in your mind's eye, you look for the path forward for them to step more into love and be more like a brother or sister, be more like family. Once you're in that state of consciousness where you're seeing this person truly and in love, how could they possibly be your enemy at that point? And that's why I think it's a paradox to say, you know, praying for your enemies, because ultimately when you're in that solid, sincere state of prayer, then you really have not allowed room for feelings of separation. You're wanting to open your heart to actually genuinely be of service through that. So with that said, I could touch briefly on the religious divides that occur, because fundamentalism is really an issue in this country, because it is the belief that because Christ was pure, and because people are capable of saying, I align with Christ, he is my rock, you could say these things, and then you could turn around and be nothing like Christ. And this is what people are perceiving as fundamentalism to a large degree. And they don't feel love from these people very often. And it's obviously the lack of Christ in Christians that is the source of why Christianity has been a source of great division for our culture. And of course, to some degree, that plays off on the political spectrum, where one political party may more strongly say that an issue like abortion has to be tied to both the righteous judgment aspects of Christianity, and the on the other side, there's this really it's almost like there's a feeling that with the abortion issue, there has to be a feeling like anything that would control a woman and what she does is enslavement, is a total lack of love. But then we have all these gray areas where we talk about something like, if you see a woman taking drugs, drinking alcohol, who's pregnant, you know, do you have any concern for what's happening then? At what point does the woman harm the baby? And does that cause empathy more for the baby than for the woman who's causing harm to the baby? Abortion is like, it's almost like a spring-loaded sort of very, very mutually exclusive philosophy, sort of divisiveness that we're all having to process as state by state now because of the Supreme Court issue. So we have a lot of people in this country who vote strictly based on the issue of abortion. I've met many of these people who it doesn't matter what any of the other views are of a candidate. It doesn't matter if they're the most closed-hearted person. It won't matter. It only matters the idea that we're not killing babies is one way of looking at it. On the flip side, the idea of oppressing and being intolerant is the way in which this can be viewed. So ultimately, what I'm trying to talk about here is finding the path of empathy when there are just extremely intense emotions that make the other person seem evil in some way. And there was a really great article I saw posted by a friend who is, I could just share, this friend is on the left side of the spectrum, and I appreciate that Facebook may be still showing me diverse viewpoints from my friends, not keeping me in as much of a bubble. And the article was the Wikipedia article is called The Paradox of Tolerance, which is a philosophical concept suggesting that if a society extends tolerance to those who are intolerant, it risks enabling the eventual dominance of intolerance, thereby undermining the very principle of tolerance. So the idea here is, if you're so loving to people who are basically trying to control and manipulate, then you enable that control and manipulation. This is the balance between love and wisdom, of course, that the Law of One books talks about, that love is very, very useful. And certainly as a parent now, I appreciate that love is very useful up until a point with my child. And there's a point at which a bias is forming in the child towards being selfish, being of service to others, and not understanding that there's a better way to do things. And so I love the child up until the line that I feel is reached. If this is very hard to know where this line is in cases, but I can be unconditionally loving and accepting and just completely tolerant of everything up until I feel that there is some long-term damage that could occur if I'm enabling a behavior which is, I guess, intolerant of others, very non-empathic. Of course, you can't force empathy on a person. This is kind of the whole problem of government, is that we have a system where we're saying the laws are forcing people to do things or not do things. And so essentially, this is a system of control at its inception. As much as the founding fathers tried to put safeguards to preserve freedoms, the fundamental aspects of government that people both need and are injured by are those which are enforcing things which don't have the compassion or empathy for every individual case. You can have somebody, this is also why, you know, why we have jurors, and there's a principle called jury nullification, where a juror actually is entitled to the ability to reinterpret any law and decide how the law should apply or not apply if they feel that a law is unjust or should not exist. A juror in the United States can actually say, I completely disagree with that law. That law should have never existed. And they can handle their decision with the other jurors, and they can even convince other jurors, you guys know we have freedom to say that this is not fair, this law was not fair. And in this particular case, we can say, we want to have empathy for this person who was tried unjustly in our concept of justice. And this is why the jury of the peers is more appropriate than the jury of the federal government, which has tried to control and manipulate according to whatever ends the people who have sought so much power that they gain those positions to make those laws, make those decisions, influence the politicians to make those laws and decisions. This is why it's very a delicate balance between the protections that we have and the tendency of people to want to control and manipulate. But ultimately, this concept of tolerance is just the surface level that we're talking about with how you could think about a law and think about how you could help people. But ultimately, the core issue here is the individuals who are in these positions, can they have empathy? Can they actually open their hearts? Or will they continue the trends of being without concern for the welfare of others? And it's actually very, very hard when you're working for the federal government to have a real sense of how people are being affected by laws. And so it's very messy, and I don't have the answers. But the appearance of empathy is not the same as empathy. And so there's a point at which we have to recognize that people will be believing completely separately from the way we believe, and there will be the lies that are very convincing, and the lies will be very convincing on every side of any, you know, well-structured political campaign. And the question I have for everyone is, can you truly empathize with someone if their beliefs don't make any sense at all to you? Thank you guys for joining. If you want to share any comments also, you can chat, and I'll repeat what you say. I guess the another area here I wanted to touch on, this is also very fascinating. We could end up in any kind of place as a country. It's so hard to know where things are headed. But ultimately, I think the our ability to remain open-hearted towards people who have completely opposite views is actually going to be the deciding factor in the outcome of how all the transformations in government that could occur will actually result in changes that are helpful or harmful. And I sure hope we don't go to civil war as a country, but it seems that there's some people I've seen on Facebook even talking about wanting to leave the country because they're just so assuming that what's going to happen in the near future is going to be essentially, you know, the absolute opposite of love, the absolute evil and tyranny that they've been fearing. And I don't know the answer to this other than we can just continue to try to shine the lights in our own lives and be, as the law of one says, we are operating with a candle, a tiny candle in darkness, trying to correct imbalances is one of the ways that they talk about manifestation into the physical reality. All we have is a little light in front of ourselves. And this whole big masterpiece of earthly expression of confusion and distortions, this chaos that we're in is actually a part of a much bigger divine plan that we can't just immediately resolve. But every one of us has a part to play in resolving and healing the distortions, which are ancient, very ancient and cyclical. But as we approach the ending of the cycle, you know, increasingly we will have these polarizations and opportunities to correct them through the intensification of the light that we're in. But we each have our own space, our own ability to be of service. Valerie says, I believe Christ is in all, but I believe there is not always remembrance or awareness of the Christ within, and people act out when they don't see the light in themselves. I try to see the divine in people without enabling bad behavior. It is tricky with politics and religion because everyone thinks they are right and the other person is wrong. Maintain the belief in the light and in the other and trust in that they are acting in the way they think is right. Yeah, I agree with that completely. Yep. It's the need to be right that sometimes conflicts with the open-heartedness. And this is why, you know, empathizing with someone is a way to start using the mind a little bit in a way that can see the path forward for others without biting them on what we think is wrong. We see where they're at if we try to put ourselves in their shoes. Even though we might not understand all the things that led to their belief systems, we can at least make an effort to learn about why they believe what they believe. And from that standpoint, if there is a path forward to what we would see as less darkness, more light, more love, then hopefully with enough empathy, we can get ourselves into a position to be of service to that person. But if we can't see any way to be of service to that person such that they can appreciate our love for them, then we might have to take a step back and, you know, find where we're being called to address where a request has been brought forward, as opposed to where there is no request for service, which that's another quote from the Law of One, is there's really no way to offer service where no service has been requested. And the other area here is the truth-seeking communities. And it's very fascinating being in this position where Corey Good has now become a very divisive figure. And, you know, I feel like I can find empathy for everyone in these situations where there's clearly no easy way for people to know what the truth is. And it's very funny that people are claiming that, you know, if Corey contradicted himself in his testimony, that is the reason that we can't trust him, or the reason that we now know the truth. But ultimately, the truth is so hard to see. And I know I've had my own paranormal experiences, including, you know, Blue Avian Dream. And it seems to be that there's these nudges from the universe from every different direction to maintain what the Law of One described as one of the main purposes of the UFO phenomenon, and the way in which it's been interacting with us from the positive side, at least, which has been to maintain the state of mystery that allows us to begin to have a fuller comprehension of the truer nature of infinite potential. The intelligent infinity within us is the thing that they can awaken when we stop putting ourselves in a box that we know is the entirety of the truth. When we limit what is true, we put a wall against our appreciation of the infinite potentials of every aspect of ourselves. And this is a discussion that's somewhat esoteric, but the transformation of the spirit in the law of one is described as being a transformation of that which is material to that which is infinite and eternal spirit. And in a sense, all of our reality is essentially an outward projection of an inward infinite source, which is also our ultimate identity. And so simply perceiving more in terms of that which is eternal, that which is without finiteness, without temporalness, such as love and forgiveness and peace and joy, when we can bring those higher spiritual aspects in, we're actually rewriting the physical illusion, even though we don't see it, because we're used to thinking in terms of the universe as billiard balls that are bouncing off of one another. You know, the laws of manifestation have always been causing everything that we see, especially when we have encounters with people who are seemingly very different from us, who are able to trigger us and cause us to think, why can't they just recognize the facts? Why can't they recognize the truth? This has always been a projection for us to see that there's a part of ourselves where we wanted to feel separate. We wanted to feel that there was something else. And this has obviously been magnified when we have specific examples of different beliefs and different belief systems that many people are aligning with, especially amplifies, because there can be a whole almost worldview created around somebody like Corey, or something like the Law of One, or something like Christ and the Bible. There could be completely different systems that can now be the polarities that we can see and feel are needing to be brought to a greater truth if we see ourselves as on the opposite side. But ultimately, all these are separate sides of the same fractal, which is the desire to have an expression of appreciation of distortion, an appreciation of the Creator expressed in unlimited forms. But the infinite potential of expressiveness is the truer identity that allows us to reshape our reality when we break through all the blockages of each of the ways of looking at things, each of the perceptions, which are less than the sacramental perceptions, the perceptions of the heavenly and divine and faith-based aspects of our being, which is really a discussion of the energy centers and the chakras and the Law of One. I won't get into that now, but I guess this was some of the main stuff I wanted to share today. I do want to keep this short. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I think there's many ways that we can continue this discussion, and I probably have other people on, because this is a very unusual time, as I said before, where it seems like the divides are so great that they're almost unsolvable, and people just simply can't even imagine talking to their friends and family who they used to think were their close friends and family, because they fell off into a different philosophy. But the philosophy seems to be just this mirror that we're using to see ourselves in every different way. And so ultimately, the ability to empathize, I think, is key. And, you know, one of the things the Course in Miracles says is that to empathize does not mean to share in suffering. That is what we must refuse to do. We refuse to share in suffering. When somebody else is suffering in what we perceive as a state of darkness, empathy does not mean take ourselves into feelings of separation and darkness to go where they are exactly in their consciousness. It means to put yourself in their shoes and see what action is most needed. And if we have a slightly higher vantage point of light, and we're seeing someone who is in a kind of darkness and unable to see that there is hope, that there is opportunities for growth and progress, that there are lessons that are being learned, if someone is incapable of perceiving that a lesson is there to be learned, then empathizing with them allows us to see why weren't they able to see the lesson that was to be learned. And is there anywhere that we can amplify the opportunities for them to perceive what is a lesson to be learned? And there might just be a slight catalyst that we can offer to be just of slightly more service to those who are struggling to find the light of the love of Christ. So thank you guys for listening. And now I'll open this up to attendees and hope you join me on the next one.